When you eat pasta, you are essentially sending a hormonal message to your body saying, pack on more fat. That's what's happening. So even without cakes and chocolate, pasta itself turned into sugars in your body. That's what makes you gain all the weight.
Well, that's it. We're throwing our pasta out, Peter.
All pastas, lasagna, all of it.
We're done. All this stuff.
You even do. Oh, no. Happens so we can look at it.
No, we're cutting it out of our diet. We are done with pasta. We are done with spaghetti. We are done with linguine, fettuccine.
Fettuccine doesn't count.
It absolutely counts. No more pasta.
Just have a bowl of spaghetti. Come on.
No.
What happened to you? What happened?
No more pasta for you or me. Okay? It's over. We're done.
Okay.
TBTL.
He is a fan of the outrageous. He loves to surprise. He loves other things as well.
Oh, this is the best pizza in a cup ever. This guy's unbelievable. He ran the old cup of pizza guy out of business.
Game day, bucket go, boom.
But it's not on TV. That's an internet thing, okay?
The only thing that's nice about this is even though it's a Tuesday, it feels kind of like it's a Friday.
All right, everybody, it is time once again for a Tuesday afternoon edition of TBTL. This right here is a show that just might be too beautiful to live.
Definitely. For sharks.
My name is Luke Burbank. I'm your host.
Mimi!
Coming to you from the Burbank Springs Broadcast Center, perched atop Alabama Hill, in Bellingham, Washington, the Bay City. You know, I don't like to throw the word hero around, but I'm telling you, I am a real profile in courage today as I come to you on episode 2725 in a collector series. Because earlier today, Carrie and I were downstairs trying to put a rug underneath a bed in the basement of Burbank Springs.
That's my wife.
It was a rug that she bought like a year ago that's just been rolled up. Not in use, and the reason is because it was too hard to pick up the bed. And we picked finally, it's like a platform bed, which there's no good handhold on it. It from IKEA, it weighs 1,000 pounds, and it's disintegrating, like most things from IKEA after 3 years. And so I'm trying to be like masculine and lift this thing up and also not throw out my back because I'm also old now. So like I gauge most activities going in as, is this going to hurt my back? Like, I'll be in bed, and my phone will be charging on the nightstand. It'll start to go off the alarm, and I will think to myself as I roll over, am I rolling over in such a way that this could actually hurt my back? I've also thrown my back out sneezing. So anyway, I'm trying to be masculine and manly, but also not hurt myself, and I'm picking the bed up, and it's not working, and next thing you know, it's time to put the bed down really abruptly and really fast, which I do right on top of my fingers. Fingers are mostly okay, but they were pretty skinned up, and Carrie, lovingly, like a Florence Nightingale, attended to my fingers and put some Band-Aids on there.
That's my wife.
But I'll tell you, I can't type for anything right now. And as I was trying to put the show sheet together, I realized, man, I'm very reliant on my ring finger and my middle finger on my left hand for typing, which right now they're basically out of commission. So that's my way of saying, yeah, you guys, I'm an overcomer today. I could have called in sick. I could have, you know, decided that just I wasn't up for doing the show today, but I didn't. I decided to persevere and push through, and here I am, ready to let the fun begin.
Let the fun begin.
Because we have a lot to talk about on this Tuesday, including a story of another person overcoming the odds, a 50-year-old, slightly portly high school football coach who never played football at any organized level because he was sort of too small and too slow, who is now a couple of games away from winning $1 million at flag football.
It's a kind of magic.
Last night I found myself going down a rabbit hole of watching this guy and his flag football highlights. It's kind of an amazing story. We've also got emails and V-mails, and we have the longest-running Cobro of the show. He has political correctness run amok. His voice is like a combination of Fergie and Jesus. He wants to hug the show and never let it go. He can only hear Yanni, and yet, ironically, he's Andrew
Laurel
Walsh, who joins us now from the Roosevelt neighborhood of Seattle, Washington. Hello, my dude.
Hey, Bubby. You know, that doesn't make sense.
Trying a new thing where you say Bubby?
Yeah, I guess so. I didn't know what I was going to say until I opened my mouth. Although, all right, let's just do this. Let's start the show on a very awkward note. Bubby, I had a coworker, a guy who was like kind of a generation older than me and kind of a, when I was a young journalist, he was a like an editor. I looked up to him. He's a friend. And I feel like, and he's Jewish, and he would call people Bubby. It was a term of endearment. But
yeah, but Bubby is usually for female.
And I thought, isn't it for grandma?
Yeah, it's like...
why was he calling me Bubby? Was he calling me something else that sounded like Bubby? Did he need new glasses? Bub? Anyway, great to be here. Thanks for having me, Luke. Glad I could bring that kind of content to the show today.
I'm trying to find the clip from Guffman where Dr. Pearl talks about Bubby made a kishka.
I love to make people laugh, and I've been doing it since, you know, school. People ask me, were you must have been the class clown. And I say, no, I wasn't. But I sat beside the class clown, and I studied him.
Oh, my goodness.
Is that HD audio? How are you able to maintain the crispness of the DVD? That's what I want to know.
Listen, guy who started the show by calling me Bubby. You're going to enjoy this sound quality, my friend. That wasn't even the right clip. I'm such a Moishe Kapoida.
I'm sorry.
All right, sorry. Now we're doing it. Now we're really doing it.
I love to make people laugh, and I've been this class clown, and I studied him and saw how he made people laugh, and so I picked some things up, and at parties and family functions, I have to say, I love, you know, breaking people up. So there's a thing that I think I got an entertaining bug from my grandfather, Chaim Perlgut, who was very, very big in the Yiddish theater back in New York. He was in the sardonically irreverent Dibbik Schmibbik, I Said More Ham. And that review, I believe, was 1914, and that review is what made him famous. Incidentally, the song Bubby Made a Kishka came from that review.
There. We got there. See, you glad I called you Bubby?
It's about
at the top
the journey.
Of the show? Right. How are
what
our
I
ratings?
Wonder is, did Eugene... Don't ask, Bubby. did Eugene Levy, like, how much of that did he have in his mind, like, planned out when he starts talking about his grandfather, Chaim Perlgut, and, like, Bubby made a kishka? You know what I mean? I'm very curious about the process, because if that is just – if he is really just ad-libbing that 100% without any sort of plan in mind, I bow even deeper to him, because that is incredible specificity.
That's so really great. I feel, though, that – and it's not like I'm any closer to it, but – I feel like something like that, obviously, they must be doing different takes. They hit on one idea that probably works a little bit, then they do it again, and they keep some of it, and it's never quite scripted, but, you know, if he was going to do another take, it wouldn't be completely different. You would keep some of the jokes that got everybody laughing, right?
That would be my guess as well, is that they sort of start – they start with the scene. They know kind of what is supposed to over – like what the overall arc of the scene is supposed to be. And then within that, they improvise, and maybe what we're seeing is the 11th take, where it's becoming more and more refined, and he's repeating certain things that have kind of worked in the other takes. I don't know. That movie still remains pretty great in my mind. I started following Michael McKeon on Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
He's the he was it Lenny or Squiggy from Laverne and Shirley, but of course he was also in Spinal Tap. He played. He was Adrian Van Voorhees, the band leader on the Jiminy Glick Show, who played the harp.
And of course, he's been, Better Call Saul, huge role.
Oh, is he in Better Call Saul?
Yeah, big role. Yep.
He's I mean, particularly from Spinal Tap, like I adore him. I was once having lunch in Culver City, California, and he was sitting near me, and I was so excited. I didn't do anything. I didn't say anything to him. As we talked about on a previous show, it's like, what impact positively are you really making on that person's life to go up to them and be like, Spinal Tap? Right. So I didn't, but I've always loved him. And when I made a tweet the other day, or now it's a couple weeks ago, that went kind of had a lot of retweets. I think he retweeted it, which made my life. And so then I thought, well, he retweeted something I tweeted, so now we're almost colleagues. I'll start following him, and maybe he'll be like, oh, that's the guy from that tweet I loved. That isn't what's happened so far, Andrew. I will tell you that I've been like occasionally like replying to tweets of his in the hopes that he'll notice me.
Notice me, McCain.
And then he won't notice me, and then I'll delete the replied tweet because it feels thirsty. So anyway, everything is going fine up here in Bellingham.
I'm looking at pictures. He played Lenny. I'm looking at pictures of Lenny and Squiggy now.
Doesn't Squiggy remind you of David Sedaris? And I know it wasn't David Sedaris, but I just feel like...
Yes.
I feel like David Sedaris could have played Squiggy.
Yeah, sure. Now that you say that. Anyway, so
the character would have been very different.
Very different? I guess substantially different. I'll go with you on that.
Speaking of tweets, I composed a tweet last night that, I mean, this really should be, we should create some branding around this because it's a pretty frequent topic on the show. This could almost be its own segment, which is tweets that I wrote that I thought were going to get a better response than they did. Last night, I was watching the Monday Night Football game between the Los Angeles Raiders, or excuse me, the Oakland Raiders, soon to be the Las Vegas Raiders, and the Los Angeles Rams. Boy, it's hard to keep all that stuff straight.
Sure is. Yeah. I got excited when I saw, you know, I let the robot auto draft for me, and I was excited when I saw I had the Los Angeles defense on my team, and then I saw that it was the Los Angeles Chargers, and I was less excited.
Right.
Anyway.
Well, I was watching it, and I saw an ad that has always – I may have even brought this up on the show before, but it always is kind of like – I've always thought it was just silly, which is the ad for Zizol, this allergy medicine, which, of course, like, you know, they named Zizol in the way they name all of these crazy drugs. Like, it's a word that isn't used by anyone else, so there aren't trademark implications. They made it up. But it somehow has been decided by some, you know, imagineering linguistic team that it connotes whatever it is that the company is going for with the fix.
This is the owl one, the owl spokesperson?
It is.
Okay.
And here, I'll play
Zafras, this is truly noteworthy. For all day, all night relief, there's Zizol. It's just as effective at hour 24 as at hour 1. Now try it free for 10 days. Be wise all and get your free sample at Zizol.com.
Now, my frustration with the commercial is that no one in history has ever said, be wise all.
Right. If you're going to make this word
a sentence.
Right. You could have made up anything you want to fit that tagline if that's what you wanted, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Make the name of the drug something that rhymes with, you're not going to sneeze anymore. Like, you've come up with this, like, you have this ridiculous name, be wise all, and of course, you're just doing it because it rhymes with Zizol.
Right.
But I feel like it is a scam is being perpetrated on the American people that be wise all is a thing. And so I wrote last night, owls love acting like be wise all is a thing anyone has ever said in normal conversation. Now, this, Andrew, was and get ready. This is going to be a masterclass. This was a multi-layered joke by me. Mm-hmm. And I want to mention I wasn't drinking last night.
Did
for
you
once.
Schedule this tweet? At a time that would...
I don't know how to do that.
Get the most reception.
No, and that might have been part of my mistake. I was tweeting it from the Buffalo Wild Wings at the Bellis Fair Mall.
Oh.
More on that in a minute.
That sounds
maybe
nice.
After the break. I just think I don't like wings. Mm. I think wings are kind of mildly gross, but you know what? I went to town on those veggies, on that crudité. I ordered 14 wings. I ate like 3 of the wings. I had him bring me like 3 extra helpings of the celery and the carrots.
Mm.
That's why I'm in this wings game.
I think that what happens is that you and I have some sort of a balance of power, or in the same way that only so much.
All you were eating
because lately, wings. Yeah, lately in the past couple of months, now that there are two places near my house that serve wings, I've been eating wings almost nonstop and thinking about them when I'm not eating them.
Really? So what I like about the idea of wings is that if you get them with a dry rub, which is why I went to B Dubs, although they're really sleeping on the weck. These days. Mm-hmm. No weck to be seen.
It's weck.
The reason I went to B-Dubs is because they have these dry rubs, which are very low carb. That's the appeal of – to me, like, I'd much rather have a boneless chicken part, you know what I mean? Like some kind of like mysteriously sourced chicken something that's breaded. I would so much rather have that than eat it off of the bone because it's more gristly if it's off of the bone. There's like a whole bunch of, to me, things that are less ideal about eating it off the bone, except that it's lower carb. So that's what I was trying to do. Got some dry rubs, and no offense to the B-Dubs, because they were very nice there, and I was able to watch the game. But I just realized, like, into wing three, I was like, I don't think I even like this. Mm. So more wings for you. Anyway, yay. I write this tweet, owls love acting like Bea Wiesel is a thing anyone has ever said in normal conversation. The reason I say it was a multi-layered joke is because there's been this kind of thing going around. It's like what white people love. I don't know if you've noticed this on Twitter. It's like white people love saying, we got here just in time when the line to get in the restaurant gets long behind them.
Oh, yeah. I've said that.
Like, you know, that's not mine. That's something somebody actually wrote. Like, there's just been this thing kind of going around about people. And again, this is because I feel the opposite of Wiesel sharing this again, but because I've been spending much more time in black Twitter now, I see a lot of sort of like just comments about the way that white people and Moss tend to operate.
You're not taking a master class on black Twitter, but you are auditing some of the classes. You're not participating, but
I'm taking an online course.
Yeah, okay, gotcha.
Which works for my schedule.
Oh my God.
And so anyway, I was trying to mirror – I thought it would be a funny joke because I've seen it – I've honestly seen that – a version of that tweet applied towards presumably people of color, sometimes using the N-word, which is not a world that I'm about to enter in on Twitter. And then I've seen that kind of – I don't even know if it's fully a meme, but I've seen people being like, you know, on Twitter like, white people love this thing. And not just stuff white people like, but like – a more kind of casual version of that. So I thought it would be funny if I was presenting a thing that owls love to do.
Oh,
because,
I see. I didn't.
Let's
get
be
that
honest. What do we know the habits of the owl to be? We have limited information on owls. One thing I don't think they do as a group is try to convince us Bea Wiesel is actually a phrase. So see, this is where the comedy comes in.
And anyway, you didn't. And what did you get? Did you delete the tweet yet? Because you didn't get what you wanted.
I haven't deleted it yet. And now that I talked about it on the show, I can't. But. I mean, maybe just somebody called Eric the Brunette came on and said, this is the most reverse engineered commercial character ever. And maybe that was enough. Like, somebody else heard me. And now you heard me today, too, that Bea Wiesel is not a thing. And that's all I really needed. Well, you know, I don't know, 20, 30 likes, a retweet or two. I mean, it wouldn't hurt.
That's what you got, 20, 30?
No, That's what I wish I would have gotten.
Yeah,
I felt like it was a strong tweet.
Yeah, because you were a Twitter star a couple of weeks ago, so I feel like you would have
you what, they love you and leave you.
I wanna totally grab hold of this conversation and bring it back to something that is no more interesting to the listeners, and it's even more like kind of self-centered of me to take it in this place. But I just have to tell you that Wiesel commercial was part of an episode of After These Messages I did with Genevieve, that it was Genevieve's idea to do a show based all on owl commercials. And there are so many owl commercials out there. We're not going to go over all of them, but you have like some eyeglass companies, WGU, that online university has the
Western
owls.
Western Governors University.
TripAdvisor, Geico.
What about back in the day, Give a Hoot, Don't Pollute?
Give a Hoot, Don't Pollute. How many licks does it take to get to a Tootsie Roll Pop? Also, and here's the other thing I want to say. We have a listener, I believe, of both shows. His name is Jeffrey, and he's our chief jingle officer because he made like a jingle for us for a segment we do. And we asked him, hey, can you take that same jingle and make us one about owls? And he did. This is what I think is probably the best podcasting joke I ever did that I don't know that anybody quite got. Throughout the show, we kept sprinkling his jingle in, but it kept changing a tiny bit. I'm going to go through these with you because, like I say, this is gold.
Hey, at Wizards, too many owls.
Okay, so that was version one. Hey, at Wizards, too many owls.
Wise at Wizards, always choose owls.
Wise at Wizards, always choose owls.
What the fuck, guys? Quit with the owls.
Actually, I skipped one. That was the one we ended with, which I just thought was brilliant on his part.
I like that.
Yeah. All right. I got to talk about after these messages. You got to talk about a tweet that you thought didn't get enough respect. Yeah. Is it break time?
Try to get that a little get that a LiveWire / TB. I just called TBTL LiveWire. Get that the TBTL bump. I'm amazed I don't do that more. Like, I'm not trying to bend this around into a self compliment, but like, now we're getting back into LiveWire season. It's like, these things are very different experiences for the listeners and the attendees of the shows and for me, and yet there's enough overlap that I can't believe I'm not. I always think, oh, this is going to be the week where I call LiveWire TBTL multiple times from stage.
Well, I wish you would. Have you ever done that?
I think maybe like once, and then I tried to sort of joke it off, as it were.
You'll go blind.
This seems like a great time to take a break. So let's do that.
I stand by that joke.
All right, quick break, and then we'll be back, and we'll do some top stories. Thanks for donors of the day. We'll wash Andrew's mind out with soap. I didn't even get to my clean canteen obsession. That was the other hot... That's the other hot hashtag content I had ready to go on this Tuesday, Andrew.
Wait, what canteen?
Clean canteen.
I don't know what you're talking about. Let's come back to it after the break. How do you feel about that?
Oh, my God. It was half a joke, but okay. We'll do it.
All right.
Stay with us. It's TPTL.
4, 3, 2, 1.
$300 in a photo ID gives them the right to fly through the air like one of the guardian owls of legend.
Treasures you found in a hole in the ground. How about the tree back your house with a
Ascot?
We're in between the attic and the basement, so it's not dark, 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 dark.
I like this. Yeah. You said this is Architecture in Helsinki?
Yeah, I used to listen to this record a lot, and then I haven't in a long time. They have a very distinct sound.
Yeah, I like them. I went down a weird musical rabbit hole today before the show. I was reading this shockingly, for me, surprisingly emotionally resonant profile of Steve Perry, former lead singer of Journey.
Oh, yeah.
In the New York Times. Just about where he's been for the last 27 years. And the story was very emotionally impactful because it talks about how, like, he, some number of years ago, he met a woman through happenstance who he was quite enamored with, and asked their mutual friend if they could set them up. And it turned out the woman had been battling cancer and was, you know, sort of inoperable towards the end of her life. But he was so interested in her, and that they sort of found each other, and they were a couple for the last year and a half of her life,
oh, wow.
Which is like a very sweet story. And she was the one who had basically said, you got to go back to like doing music because I want you to. So he's like out. He's not in Journey anymore, but he, he's got a new album out or whatever it was. But there was just like, if you like Journey, the band, or if you find Steve Perry to be an interesting person, by all means, check out this article in the New York Times. But it mentions that like he had this unlikely friendship with the guy E from the band Eels.
Okay.
You remember them from the 90s,
I don't know,
right?
If I do. I don't know if I do.
I bet you do, and you just don't remember.
Probably. While you look that up, I'll say I didn't realize that he's the guy who did, oh, Sherry, hold on.
I shouldn't be singing on the show. That? I didn't know that until we were hanging out. I think it was Fight Night at Camaro Kev's a few months back.
Camaro's
you were there.
Really, really having a moment with, how do you spell Novocaine? The importance.
You can look that up. You don't need me to
personal reasons.
Say that. Numb hands. Anyway, yeah, and when his name came up on their iPod shuffle or something, I'm like, Steve Perry, that name rings a bell. He's like, yeah, Journey and also Oh Sherry. And then I went through a little Oh Sherry phase for about a week after that. I had forgotten about that song.
Eels is this band that this guy, Mark Oliver Everett, a.k.a. E, kind of here's a big song for them. Called Novocaine for the Soul. This is off of Beautiful Freak from 1996, Andrew, right in your wheelhouse of late. So I don't die.
Oh, yeah, I remember this song.
Oh, you remember
man,
this now?
I do. God, shit. I forgot about that song. God, the 90s had a sound.
Like, I used to listen to this album, Beautiful Freak, so much, and I completely forgot about it until I was reading this Steve Perry profile. And, like, Steve Perry of Journey fame started in L.A., presumably, going to Eels shows. But the guy from Eels, E, who kind of, let's be honest, he's always seemed extremely pretentious to me. The E is for extremely pretentious. Like, he just seems like, I don't know the guy from Adam, and he might be a lovely human. And who knows, you might even hear this. Maybe we have super fans of that band, and they'll send it to him. But and having seen him, I think I saw him live somewhere once. He just seemed like a guy who was very artsy and very in his own world, and I take that to be somebody who I wouldn't probably get along with.
Yeah.
A threat. I know. I do.
How
and
dare
I
you
why.
Say
I,
I'm stupid, E?
Right? I like, that's exact. I mean, that is, you're not wrong, actually. So for some reason, Steve Perry, who seems like the opposite of E from Eels, is like going to these Eels shows, and he loves the band, but the guy from Eels, E, won't invite him backstage or recognize him because it's like it's Steve Perry from Journey, and the guy from Eels is not into Journey.
Ugh.
He literally says this to the New York Times. But then, eventually, some mutual friend says, nah, Steve Perry's cool. So they start letting him come backstage. And then apparently E from Eels invites him over to, wait for it, his weekly croquet party that he likes to have at his house. And then eventually Steve Perry's just showing up uninvited, like literally just showing up randomly at E from the Eels' house. They become friends. And then when Steve Perry finally decides he's going to perform live for the first time in many, many, many years. He does it as while the Eels are playing at the Fitzgerald Theater in St. Paul.
Oh.
And, yeah, so there's all these dazzling deets in this profile of Steve Perry. But all this led me down to re-listening to Beautiful Freak by Eels. And you know how it is, just like an album that you had completely forgotten existed.
Yeah.
And yet you put it back on and you know every single song. You're like, oh my God, this was like a solid year or two of my life when I was listening to this CD all the time.
Yeah, yeah. I'm trying to think. I can't think off the top of my head of something that I forgot existed, but I know I've had that feeling before. I feel like I have a couple of Edie Brickell albums that I haven't listened to in 30 years, but I know that if you put it on, I would be able to start singing the words to the next song in the space in between the songs. You know, I would know exactly what comes next. I think my soul would just know.
So you did know about Eels, though. So that
I did know that song that
loud
you played.
Up here, so
yeah.
That song did ring a bell. Okay.
Yep. That I got
feel
really
like
excited.
When
to
I was
hear
listening
that.
To it, I was getting excited to tell you about it because I feel like you're like very you are very much in the 90s.
Mm-hmm.
Currently, with
I
a lot of your
90s.
Musical taste.
Yeah.
The other thing I was listening to today, which maybe we could even go out with, was the first couple of tracks off the new Kurt Vile album.
Oh, yeah. That's your wheel.
Are you familiar with Kurt Vile?
Oh, mostly through you and you playing the stuff with Courtney Barnett and just knowing that those two, like those guys are mostly on my radar. I mean, they're both pretty big right now. And Vile is the one who used to be in War on Drugs, right? Or he had a connection
yes.
to it? Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. He was part of that band. He's from Philly. And I saw this on Twitter. I didn't figure this out, but like his new... his new album, I think it's called Bottle It In. And I believe somebody wrote this on Twitter. He's in the cover shot for the album. He's wearing a t-shirt that is the free t-shirt they give you if you sign up at Planet Fitness.
Yeah.
And I don't think he's doing it for effect. I get the feeling he was just wearing that t-shirt on the day when they took the picture for the album. And I was just thinking today, I was like, if I could in any way get a 1/1000th of the self-confidence that Kurt Vile has, I would be fine.
Right.
Everything would be fine in my life. Like, he appears to be, maybe it's a front, maybe it's an elaborate show. And it wouldn't be the first time that someone has a kind of devil-may-care attitude that's really a way of covering for the fact that they very much care. But I will tell you this, if the singer Kurt Vile is affecting and intentionally putting a front up, it is working.
Right.
I 100% believe it.
I loved the disdain in your voice when you talked about the croquet party. You didn't even have to comment on it. You ready for this?
Well,
a croquet party. Which, hey, I've gone. A bunch of the friends that I have in Seattle now, I met them at. They got together at the park in the city near where I used to live, Cal Anderson Park, and they were like, "Hey, a bunch of us are going to be playing croquet in the park. Do you want to come?" And I did, and I had a great time, and it was fun.
Let me say this: we have a croquet set that we bought at at Value Village, and it's currently, I think, maybe in our yard still. Not even set up, but just sitting there because we were going to set it up.
Mm-hmm.
I love croquet as a kid.
It's not anti-croquet. It just speaks the world of this. It's a dazzling detail that really kind of tells the tale of who E from Eels, as you only refer to him, is.
You know, and again, I know that you're not trying to call me out on this. You're saying that it's actually illuminating.
I agree. No, there's something. I mean, I think that you were right to point out. It's like one of those things that I can't put my finger on. If any listener or somebody heard us talking was offended by it, I wouldn't be like, oh, yeah, no, I don't think that croquet, that there's anything wrong with it or that it has to be an affectation. But just in this case, with all the context you told that story, it just comes off as so affected.
Yeah, it kind of does. And yet, if I think about it, I mean, yard games are fun.
Yeah,
and if somebody was like, come over and play croquet, I'd be like, oh, that sounds fun to me. Because, again, I loved croquet when I was a kid. My Aunt Alice and Uncle Tom would have it set up in the yard. You'd go over there for a summertime get-together, and I'd just be like, hell yeah. I still don't really understand how to play it.
Yes, I was about to say the same thing. It is fun. I don't really fully understand. Everything I know about croquet, I learned on that day I met my friends and from the movie Heathers.
There's something about sending people's ball, which that was always the fun part, but I'm sure I wasn't doing that right. There was something about you step on both of them and then you hit it.
Right.
But like,
they do that in Heathers.
Oh, really? Is E in Heathers?
Sorry, you lost me for a little bit there. I had a case of the coughs. I was drinking tea. I'm drinking lukewarm tea, and it just went down the wrong pipe.
Well, Andrew, maybe you should consider drinking from a clean canteen.
Tell me.
The likes of which I just ordered four from Amazon because I'm a nut.
Tell me about this.
I've been on this thing. I'm like, I want to drink more water. It's healthful. I want to drink water when I would be maybe otherwise snacking on unhealthy foods, maybe also at times when I would be consuming booze juice. I just thought, get more water in the system. Can't hurt. And so I decided I wanted a vessel for that. But and you know how I keep talking about it? It was even in the newsletter video. I've been using this sort of giant insulated water bottle that I got from WBUR one time at a radio conference.
It's cool.
It's a cool thing, but it's too big. Like, I can't carry it around everywhere. It's cumbersome. And so I was like, there's got to be a smaller version of this that's just, you know, a little bit more portable, but still kind of has a nice design to it. Still keeps the water cold. And so I went on a kind of fairly involved mission to try. I went to the REI here in Bellingham. They didn't have anything that was the right size. So then I went on Amazon and I found this black. So Clean Canteen, they're kind of the big one that makes stainless steel water bottles. But I got this one that it's actually painted black, which I like better for some reason. I don't know, less fingerprinty, and also just looks murdered out.
You see a red canteen and you want it painted black.
That's right. One of my least favorite songs of all time, by the way. Would you guess?
Gives you that bad feeling, all those negative, or I'm sorry, all those minor chords or whatever.
Yeah.
I think of that song as something that actually really, like, that to me was a gateway to the fact that not all, like, the kind of quote-unquote oldies that I was listening to, all the Beatles and Stones and all that stuff, that, like, whoa, there is a whole nother world of music out there. Like, that song, I remember listening to that. I didn't fully understand it. I understood it had some sort of connections to the Vietnam War, which I think mostly is just that it's used in a lot of Vietnam War movies. I don't think it's about Vietnam. I don't really know what the hell it's about. But I just remember that song, like, honestly, sitting in my room and listening to it and just being like, holy shit, man. There's so much,
and it was like exciting
there.
To you. You were digging
so
it.
Exciting to me, so exciting. Wow. Just like I was, just like, oh my god, what is going on in this song?
See, we've covered this ground before, so we don't have to do it again. But like, it's just so the difference in our, like, what resonated with us and what didn't resonate with us at the same exact age is just fascinating to me.
I was 30.
Like, that song, I was like, get me away from that song right now. And for you, it sounds like it was like, you were like, there's, like you said, there's a whole world out there of this kind of music that I didn't know about.
Yes, and also just like, there, it just reminded me that there's a whole world of things I didn't know about, I think, too. I just remember, I'm probably collapsing a whole bunch of moments into one particular, like, cinematic moment in my head, but I do recall, like, sitting in my bedroom had a blue theme. I inherited it, and I just remember sitting on the blue carpet, like, listening to that song on my new realistic double-deck stereo system and just being blown away. Anyway, so you see a red clean canteen. You want it painted black.
I like it. It's this powder coat or whatever it's got on it. That it's black. But mostly I ordered it sight unseen because, of course, I got it from the internet. And it showed up, and it was exactly the size I wanted it to be, Andrew. It was 18 ounces.
Mm-hmm.
It is, like, you can throw it in your backpack. You could even put it in the pocket of a coat. It's not gigantic, but it's like, I was like, I could probably drink four of these in a day. So, like, just refill it a few times. And it has this little, like, lid on the top of it that is kind of, for lack of a better way to describe it, it has basically a permanent straw on the top.
Oh, nice, yeah.
So you could, but you can kind of pop that down so that it's not going to spill, but then you can pop it up so that you don't have to take the whole lid off. I've been, like, sleeping with this thing on my night. I fill it up with water before I go to bed. We have, like, water in the refrigerator, like a little, whatever you call it, filter deal. I fill it up with that. Stays cold all night. I have a little straw thing going. So then in the middle of the night, I don't, like, pour cold water down my shirt. I take a little sip through the straw thing. I feel like Harvey Levin from TMZ. Who's perpetually got, like, a water bottle with a straw going. But this is where I can't leave well enough alone. So I get this thing in the mail the other day, Andrew, and I'm just like, wow, this is perfect. This is exactly what I wanted. The size works, the functionality of this little straw thing. And I've been using it. Like, I've been drinking so much more water over the last 4 days. So what do? I ordered, like, three more.
They're going to say, I got Wi-Fi for it. It's now a Wi-Fi water bottle. Go ahead.
Because I was like, well, first of all, they're not particularly expensive. And I was just like, what if I lose this? I love this thing now. What if I lose it? Or what if I leave it in the car and I'm inside and I don't want to go out to the car? And I'm just like, I need to now have one of these strategically placed everywhere in my life. And the box showed up with the other clean canteens in it today. And Carrie was like, what is that? I was like, clean canteen. She's like, looks at the dog. She goes, your dad, he's got to triple up on everything.
Oh, she looked at the dog and said that and referred to you.
Yeah,
you
that's – we talk – we act like we're the human parents of the dog.
Right. I didn't know.
Is ridiculous. But
let,
like,
me – can I weigh in here?
I don't know why I have to do that kind of stuff. But I regret nothing.
Because I want to tell you, you and I are going kind of down a very similar road, but then that road branches off and we take different roads. Because I, too – am a recent convert to the water bottle, and I realize how that sounds. Like, for at least a decade, probably almost everybody in my life has a water bottle that they throw in their backpack,
right,
and they just have it with them all the time. I, you know, working from home, I got into the system, like, I don't know, I think when I was in L.A., and it doesn't really make sense. I would buy maybe three water bottles, like, I'm sorry, bottled water, you know, From the grocery store, and then I would drink them, and then I would just constantly refill them until I started to think, eh, I've been using this one for too long. Like, maybe it's a smart water bottle or Aquafina or something like that, and then I would throw them away. And I think it was actually our buddy Hannah who came over here, and I was like, okay, I can give you this bottle of Aquafina because this one has not been opened, but stay away from those. Those are not for guests. Those are the ones that I refill for myself. And she kind of laughed. She's like, why don't you just get yourself a water bottle? And I was like, ha, 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 I don't need a water bottle. Then you and I went hitchhiking, and I was like, I need a real refillable water bottle. And you've seen this guy. I almost went with a more designy one at the store, but I got a plastic one. It's actually Rubbermaid brand. You know, you can fill it up with ice and ice cubes. Got a little hatch at the top. Kind of like it's like your version of the straw, only it's not a straw, a little hatch on top. I love it. I was Genevieve and Hannah were both making fun of me because I was like, why didn't anybody tell me about water bottles? I love it. I keep mine full of ice all the time. I'm constantly making ice for my water bottle, and it's just another level of puttering. And here's the deal, though. I am not tempted to buy more of these because I have a weird obsession with objects, especially I got to a certain part of my life, I think maybe midlife, and I started thinking back on like old toys and stuff that I used to have, or I'd come across an old toy at a flea market in LA, and I'd be like, holy shit, I forgot about this toy. I used to have this toy, and now I'm touching it in my hands, and like it's reminding me of it, like this tactile memory is blowing me away. And now I feel like when I have an object in my life, like a new object that I think someday I might come across and be like, remember how you used this object every single day, and it was such a part of the fabric of your life. I actually like having one water bottle because maybe someday this will go out of use, and I'll be moving apartments, and I'll find this buried in a box somewhere, and I'll be like, ah, remember the great water bottle of 2018? And I'll take it out, and I'll cradle it, and I'll talk to it. Got a little bit weird at the end, but I stand by most of what I said.
To me, objects and people are just interchangeable.
No, that's good to hear.
If I find any one of the four clean canteens, I'll just be like, remember when I used to take care of myself for that week? Like any of the clean, because they're exactly the same. And this is, I know I've talked about this so many times, but it's like, this is, I'm looking in my closet right now here in the office in the broadcast center, and it's like multiple of the same shirt. Multiple of the, because for me, it's like, I just want to be able to me. It's like, I just want to, but it's unnecessary. It's like a weird anxiety thing where, and I wouldn't do this. Were these water bottles $100? I wouldn't be buying multiple. It's that they're $15 or something. To me, it's like, well, I just don't ever want to have the moment where I reach for this water bottle and I don't have it, which honestly is really like, it's an anxiety thing that I don't exactly have a real good read on why I am that way. Because the chances are I'm not going to lose this one that I'm holding. And then if I did, at that point, I could order another one if I really needed to. But it's like I don't have to have – when am I going to have like four water bottles in play? And if that happens, what is going on with my life? Like it makes no sense.
Picture it's a Colonel Kurt situation. I'm going to come into your studio and it's going to be really dark. Your candles are going to be burning in skulls and you're going to be surrounded by water bottles.
Tahara. And I'll just be wearing some Rod Laver sneakers that are one of 12 pairs I have in the same closet. It is a bizarre – I don't understand what the mechanism in my brain is where it's like, oh, this thing, this is working for me. I like it. I must make sure that I am never without it under any circumstances. I mean, it's – I guess I should just be happy that to carry it's more amusing than anything because it could be read as like mildly troubling.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, I wonder like if part of that is – part of your behavior growing up kind of poor and not having access to the nicer things that you coveted. And now that you have some disposable income to spend on this stuff, you
I got water bottle money.
Yeah. Now you got water bottle money. You but feel the maybe. Need to like kind of surround
yourself.
I mean,
that would be an
it.
Obvious explanation, and then that would be the most generous one. So I'll take it, but it just could be about some other weird bullshit that I haven't even figured out yet. I will say this though, I'm with you on the being weird to be like a 40 plus year old person living in the Northwest who's just like this week being like water bottles folks. Right. Like it's like part of the uniform of living in this part of the world, and of course many other parts of the world, but in particular in the kind of outdoorsy Northwest, like everyone always has a water bottle. And I honestly this week I'm just like, you guys, Have you guys heard of water bottles?
I can't wait. In about 5 years, you're going to be like, I've tried on these shoes. They're called Tevas. They're going to blow your mind. They let your feet
Have
breathe.
Have you guys ever heard of polar fleece?
Yeah, that's a better example.
Let's thank the donors of the day. And today it's going to happen over the Kurt Vile song, Loading Zones, off the new album, Bottle It In. Ooh, water bottle it in.
Ooh.
You got a show title.
Back is aching, but I cannot sleep, because I won't be beat like I am the mayor of some guy.
A lot of this song is about wearing a Planet Fitness t-shirt.
Oh, really? So it just happened to be what he was wearing.
Yeah. Let's thank the donors of the day. These are folks who donated during this year's TBTL-a-thon. They're making the show possible. Like me, they're heroes today because I'm making the show possible playing hurt with my two injured fingers. And their donations are what allow the show to happen as well. I'd say we're co-heroes of this broadcast. Michael Havens of Tumwater, Washington. Jessica Lucas of Haddonfield, New Jersey. Gina Muto of Federal Way, Washington. Kristen Bedno of Culver City, California, where I once saw Michael McKeon at lunch. And Marissa Martinez of Baltimore, Maryland. Marissa, Kristen, Gina, Jessica, and Michael, thank you so much for donating to TBTL. Thank you for being generous. Thank you for prioritizing this show. You got a lot of people coming at you. You got a lot of Kickstarters. I joked on Twitter I want to start a Kickstarter to buy Rudy a suit and some rings so she can be Terry Bradshaw for Halloween because she looks exactly like Terry Bradshaw. But a lot of people out there vying for your charitable donation, and you guys charitably have donated to TBTL, and that's the only way this happens. Thank you for being wise all and donating to TBTL. Michael, Jessica, Gina, Kristen and Marissa, we would not be here without you. That's the way I live my life. Yo, man, one time I was at Planet Fitness, and there was this guy on the elliptical that I was going to use. It was my favorite, because it's the one that isn't in front of a TV playing Fox News. When did I turn him into Mitch Hedberg?
I don't know what's going on. And then I went to get on the escalator.
Like, I don't even know what Kurt Vile talking like sounds like, but that's in my mind when he talks what it sounds like. It sounds like Mitch Hedberg, apparently. Sure. So that was pretty cool what I just did there. I do have a dirty knob situation. That's not why K-Dude and Lil Hoagie were blown out yesterday.
No, that wouldn't make
sense. I can't explain that.
Yeah.
I cannot explain that, Andrew, and I won't explain it. I won't dignify your comments with a response from yesterday. But if you're not a sports person, but you like hearing bass lines blown out, as Newman would say, tune into yesterday's No Point Conversion because that was rough.
That was weird. Yeah, send me that file before next Monday. Actually, you know what? We're going to have to do a No Point Conversion on Tuesday next week, aren't we? Because the Browns will be playing on Sunday, but the Seahawks will be playing Monday night football against the Bears, like we talked about yesterday.
Good remembering. We're minutes to the river, but I don't think that jeez.
No, you don't want a false river. You don't want to fake the river.
Hello and welcome to Top Story.
If you could see how low the level is. I got to get a new board. I want to take a picture of this board and send it to you. The drop I just played, which was wildly hot, wildly loud when it started, is at like 10%. The knob is turned 10% of the amount that the knob on my mic is turned. And the gain is lower on where the drops are. Like, and nothing has changed from yesterday, and yet all of this to say, my board be crazy.
I have a theory, but I don't want to talk about it on the air because it's just going to be boring. Fair.
Let me tell you about this guy that I am quite inspired by. He is named Chris Hughes. He's 50 years old. He's described generously by USA Today, highschoolsports.com, as stocky.
Mm-hmm.
He is the coach of the Fairview, Tennessee high school football team. And he and his team, the Mean Machine, which is not his high school football team, the Mean Machine is his flag football team he plays on with other adults. He is getting very close to winning the 7-on-7 NFL-sponsored flag football tournament. First prize, $1 million.
Wow.
This is a big trend in sports. Like, there's the 3-on-3 league for basketball. And, like, I think what these sports are figuring out is that you got these kind of, like, off-seasons where there's not as much going on. And if you can come up with a version of your sport that maybe some of the, like, former greats could play, you can keep people engaged and you can make some money off of some tickets and some TV sales, but it's not quite the real thing. Like, there's two different, if I have this right, there's about two different 3-on-3 basketball leagues going, full of old retired NBA players. And then I think this is football trying to capitalize on that by having a flag football league, and a lot of the people in the league are former pro players. Well, this guy Chris Hughes, he's got his team Mean Machine, and he wants to be in this flag football competition. Here's what he said. I had to apply three separate times before they would let us in. We were the 127th out of 128 teams they let in because they saw me with no college experience. They were looking for ex-college and pro athletes who run the 4-4 and have some recognizable names. Well, in high school in the 80s, where, by the way, he went to Fairview High School, where he's now the football coach, Hughes was 5'4 and 97 pounds. He played baseball and rode the bench in basketball, but did not play football beyond the eighth grade. He said, I always had a love for the game. I just wasn't big enough. That's why flag football kind of fit me. In a recent game, he completed 27 of 29 passes for 369 yards and 5 touchdowns. He says, I see the field real good. I'm not the most athletic, but I've got these fast guys, and I just get them in space and I let them run. I run scout team throws against my high school team, and then we do 7-on-7 drills, and I tear them up throwing the ball. They get frustrated, but I tell them, look, guys, when I play flag football, it's like this. I'm a really good quarterback. Don't get frustrated. You have got to, at some point, watch the video of this guy.
All right.
He looks like he quantum leapt into this scenario. Like, you have a bunch of receivers and other people running around out there who are traditionally athletic people. They are muscular. They are fit. They are fast at running. They can jump. And then you have this little hobbit of a man who's directing traffic and throwing these, frankly, awkward-looking passes, awkward as they come out of his hand, but beautiful in that they find their mark. Hmm. He is basically the dominant player in this flag football league full of mostly ex-professional and college players. It's totally insane.
Wow. How did he talk himself into it again? Or how did he talk himself into the league, I should say?
Well, everybody else on his team looked like they could have played college football.
Oh, okay.
Like,
so
it's not like a team. It's not like a Tim Allen movie where he and John Travolta and Martin Lawrence decide they're going to, like, wild hog it into this flag football thing. Like, he is the only person. I watched hours of this flag football last night. Like, they have Tony Siragusa calling it. Like, it's like the NFL is putting some attention on this thing. He is the only person out there who looks like he looks and moves like he moves. Like, it's all athletic studs except for this one random 50-year-old guy. And it's totally incredible to watch.
Does it make you want to watch the actual broadcast of, like,
yes.
Could you see yourself getting into the flag footballs?
Only as long as he's in it.
Okay. But the sport itself.
I don't care about traditionally athletic, super fit people doing this. I care about this. I mean, it's like you put Artie Lang in the NFL, mm-hmm. and he was just like leading the Tennessee Titans to the to the Super Bowl, to the big game. Like, he is just physically he physically appears so different from everybody else on the field, but he just has this knack, and because of the vagaries of how this flag football game is designed, it just fits him perfectly. They've made it to the final, I think, 8. They've already won $25,000 for getting this far. They're going to play in a game. The next game's not until July. I guess it's going to take some time off. The next game's in July. If they win that, they win $50,000, and then they get closer to the championship where they could win $1 million.
Wow.
It's just – it's so cool.
The team would win $1 million.
The team would win $1 million. And it's also kind of fun because – this is just one of those moments where somebody is perfectly suited for the job at hand. He could not play in the real NFL, obviously. He couldn't play, probably couldn't play in high school, even at this point. But in this one weird kind of game of flag, of this kind of designed flag football, with a team of complete and utter studs running these patterns. His just like vision on the field and his just kind of whatever, some weird knack he has, is perfectly suited for this. And it's just kind of fun to see. It also gave me hope that maybe I could finally find my niche as a professional flag football player.
I know. I'm at that age, too. Whenever I hear it, I'm always looking at people's ages and be like, okay, this person is actually – okay, this person who just published their fifth book and have already won the Genius Award is only 2 years older than me – is 2 years older than me, so I still have time.
You got time.
Yep.
Well, I know that I've got my clean canteen, so I'll be well hydrated. Get out there on. I played flag football as a little kid.
Did you? I remember playing one game once. I don't think I was very good.
I don't think I was very good either, but I loved it. But man, the fields were so shitty when I was a kid. It's like Seattle in the fall, and like, believe me, the like Seattle Parks and Rec Flag Football League, you know, 12-year-old or whatever division is not getting the pick of the litter when it comes to the fields. I remember us playing like Interbay on this field, and just like. We're just standing in mud up to our ankles, and I'm trying to be Steve Largent and, like, run a pattern. And it's just like you have no – I'm wearing some old – I used to have these cleats. I know I tell too many stories about my hardscrabble youth, but I had these cleats. They were like Adidas. My mom got them at some secondhand shop, obviously, and they were like – they're actually kind of cool looking back on it, but, of course, they were not the normal cleats that other people had, so they were embarrassing. They were like soccer cleats. They were Adidas. And for some reason, the stripes on them were orange instead of white, if you can imagine that.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember kids would call them Halloween cleats, which just devastated me at the time. Even though looking back, like the funny part is now I would wear them because it's a lot has changed. Not the part about me not being insecure, but my insecurity manifests sort of differently now. Because if everybody had on like normal cleats, my thought is, okay, what's something that's one click off of the standard? Well, how do I demonstrate my uniqueness? Like, I go for that now. I want to try to, like, I don't ever want to do the thing everybody else is doing. I want to do something like them, but it's like everyone's wearing Stan Smiths. Those are very popular, but I was not going to go buy more Stan Smiths. That's why I went with the Rod Lavers, which are just a little bit different. But in those days, walking up with my Halloween cleats, boy, and getting made fun of, that was pretty crushing for me. I remember playing flag football. I remember just having real delusions of football grandeur. Most of which came crushing down when I shattered my arm in like eighth grade from a guy falling on it doing bull in the ring.
Oh, you had an arm?
And then having to ride to the hospital. What's that?
You had an arm? Sorry.
I had an arm.
That's your least favorite thing when sports hosts will.
He's out with an arm.
He's out with an arm. I heard that the other day. I thought of you. I'm like, God, I hope he has an arm. That would be terrible if he lost his
like
arm.
How much how much more time is it going to take from your life to say injury?
Right.
He's out with a broken arm. Oh man, he's going to be out 2 to 3 weeks with a hamstring. Oh man, really? What's going on? Is he fighting with the hamstring?
It's a ham, and he wants to eat the whole thing before returning. He is just going to put himself up in a treehouse somewhere with a ham, and he's going to eat his way through it.
We've been trying to get Vince Wilfork down from this tree with his ham for the last 2 months.
Where's Marshawn? Oh, he's got a ham.
Oh. Yeah. You know, it's like, can we just say hamstring injury? Anyway, yeah, I broke my arm, and it was pretty gross, which I'll spare everyone the story on. But anyway, the most troubling part of breaking my arm as a kid was not the breaking of the arm, but riding to the hospital in my coach's car, which was like a Camaro that was just full. Like, I didn't know he was a car. I didn't know he was like a hoarder until I got in this car.
Ooh.
They called the fire department. So they came out and they splinted it up and bandaged it up. And they were like, you got to go to the hospital. This is super broken. But they were like, we can't take you because we drive a fire truck.
Yeah, we're cool. Who you called the wrong guys. Now, if your arm were on fire.
If you get stuck in a tree, we'll climb up a ladder. You got a ham? Get up in a tree. We'll come up on the ladder and save you very sexily. As firefighters, we cannot transport you anywhere. So my coach was like, yeah, I'll take him. And so then I get in his car, which is just all like weird, random, like fast food trash and packs of cigarette, like used or empty cigarette packs. I swear to God, that ride, that like 8 minutes to Swedish Hospital in Ballard was more traumatic than breaking my arm.
And it's also just weird getting into another adult's car, right, without your parents. Yeah. Like, because we're so ingrained that, you know, stranger danger, and even people that you know, you don't get in strange cars. I don't know how much that was affecting you. I think I was really raised to be kind of paranoid of that stuff. So on the occasion that you're in a different adult's car with just them, it's just a weird feeling.
He was my football coach, and I had observed him. He also coached baseball. He was the coach of Police Guild, which was like the best. I don't know how this guy, by the way, who looked like Captain Lou Albano mated with Bukowski. I don't know how this guy was like a better coach of little leaguers and footballers than anyone else, because I don't remember him having any sage advice, but I remember he ran Police Guild baseball team, and they were all of the good players. And then he ran Ballard Bears football, this like peewee football thing, and that was the super good football team to be on.
That was yours.
And he was just
the super
that
good
was the one I was
okay,
on.
Yeah.
Yeah, not due to me, although I was bummed because that year that I broke my arm, I was slated to be on the starting defense. But then, and this is just a view into the level of attention we were getting as Burbank children, I got this, you know, I got this cast on my arm, and then it was itching me, and then I was like pulling the cotton out while I tried to like itch myself with a coat hanger, and then eventually I just took the cast off, and nobody noticed.
That's a very like, Genevieve thing to do.
Didn't Genevieve do that too?
She took her own braces off. She was sick of them.
That's like borderline troubling.
Yeah,
look what I have to work with.
Yeah, right. No, she is nothing like, if not
cast,
willful.
Smashed.
Right.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well,
she was
her
at
teeth
a
are straight.
House,
did she just decide? Did she just decide orthodontically that she'd accomplished everything in the world of having braces that she wanted to?
I believe so. It's her story. I should have her on to talk about it sometime. But I believe that the case was that she felt like they were supposed to be taken off a long time ago. And I could be wrong, but I think that she felt like her parents weren't making that final appointment, and she was just getting frustrated with them. And she was staying over a friend's house, and for some reason, the friend had school. They must have gone to different schools, and the friend had school.
A dentist chair.
Yeah, right.
A shitload of Novocaine.
It was in the basement, and there was a single light bulb, a bare light bulb, hanging from a wire above it, swaying back and forth. No, her friend went to school for some reason, and Genevieve
was there water
didn't.
Dripping down the wall?
I think so. It made a sound.
The cement wall.
And she was just like, I'm sick of it. And she, you know, that's what do they say? Idle hands are the devil's playground. I think that she suddenly realized, hey, look, there's a pair of pliers. These braces are driving me crazy.
Oh,
and just went to town.
But then they're on your, aren't they glued on your teeth?
Yeah.
That's the part.
Yeah, I think that the glue might have been kind of weakened because, again, I think, according to her version of the story, these things should have been taken off earlier.
Mm-hmm. Well, she might know what she was talking about.
Maybe. She is.
After listening to Dr. Death, that podcast, I have almost no faith in the medical community. Sorry, doctors and other medical professionals who are listening to us right now.
I need to listen to that because the way you talked about it sounds good. But can I say one thing that's really bothering me about this?
Yes.
Dr. Death is already a very famous real person. Or was Dr.
Jack
Kevorkian. Yeah. So if this is not about him, doesn't that feel like, I mean, couldn't they have come up with a different name? Isn't that both confusing and somewhat hacky?
Yeah, yes. I had forgotten about the Kevorkian thing, but you're right. He was known as Dr. Death because he was advocating for legal suicide. But what they're very much trying to do is piggyback on the success of Dirty John.
Sure.
Literally down to the logo. The logo might even actually be the exact same logo of like a syringe that's dispensing something bad. And the font is the same. It's like they very much want all the people who listened to Dirty John to listen to Dr. Death. And it's pretty good. Like I don't know. I listened to the third episode yesterday, and I'm right on the edge of just – I really – I said this last week. I'm on the edge of just Googling it.
Mm-hmm.
Because they did something that made me annoyed with the writing. And this is going to be – this is going to be as useful as me playing Paul F. Tompkins revoicing a Ray Liotta Chantix commercial, which is to say not very useful. But like they did this thing where – they had a whole episode. The third episode is called Occam's Razor, and I was talking about Occam's Razor before the show, actually, funnily enough. And, you know, of course, that is the sort of idea that the simplest explanation is usually the most likely to be true. And so they're trying to summarize – they're trying to sum up why it is that this surgeon in Texas was so awful. And I'm not spoiling anything by saying that. And the narrator goes, so to apply Occam's razor, is it just that he was just a bad surgeon? Which, by the way, is the simplest explanation. All these people were having terrible outcomes because this guy was a terrible surgeon. So that was it, Occam's razor. And she goes, or is it that he was impaired from drugs and alcohol? I'm going, okay, well, now we have a second theory. Or was it that he was so maniacal that he wanted to hurt them? I'm like, okay, well, now you have really strayed from Occam's razor. You're throwing out three random theories. Then she goes, or maybe. And then she gives like a fourth theory. And I'm like, you just lost me. You set up a, and again, I know this is not going to make any sense to people who haven't listened to the show, but it was like she set up a very clear thing, which is, I'm going to tell you what the most likely explanation is, and that's probably the right one. And then she does it, and then she adds like four more theories to it. I'm like, do you understand nothing about Occam's razor now?
Yeah, I can't. I mean, not hearing it.
I know, I'm sorry.
Yeah, it's but not, I can't quite tell. But I know I things like think, that.
I would like to welcome new sponsor. I'd like to welcome new show sponsor, Occam's Razor. Use the promo code OccamsRazor.com/TBTL. You'll get your first three razors for free.
Yeah, that would be a great name.
Couldn't that be a Shave of the Month Club? Wouldn't that be a good name?
That would be awesome.
A monthly shave club?
Because it's simple. Your whole point would be it would be the simplest razor plan. I think that's really great, actually.
What were you saying, though, before I interrupted you with my hilarious spoof?
Nothing. I don't think I was saying anything. I said I did want to bring up that Kevorkian thing. I was going to say I do know that feeling of when you're kind of on the edge with something and then some small piece of writing, you're just like, you know what? Screw you. That happens to me more with TV shows. A show that is like kind of premier television, but is maybe not quite premier television, but is acting like it's premier television. You're like, okay, I'll go along with this. I think a show that would be like this for me, although I haven't – I actually kind of stopped watching Lodge 49, and it's not because of any reason other than, I don't know, it wasn't kind of forced in my gullet by having it in my feed for other shows, and I just kind of like, you know, kind of fell off my radar. But that is the type
they
of show
pate
that like,
– the TV show yeah, into your brain.
Yeah. But that is the type of show that I enjoyed it for what it was. It seems to think it's a little bit better than it is. I think you would agree with me on it, that it's kind of like – you know, it's kind of got all of the trappings of what I call, you know, kind of premier television. But, you know, there's not a lot of there. You know, if you're just happy saying, you know what, I'm just going to watch this because I don't want to have to think about it too much, that's fine. But then you can be watching a show like that and then some small decision, something that just for some reason insults your intelligence or, you know, and for me, it's always something maybe news or broadcast related. Like you wouldn't be doing that live on TV. I'm not talking about a specific example with that show, but it would just be like some little thing. I'm just like, you know what? I'm done with this. And it sounds like you're kind of
questioning whether you're looking for a reason.
Yeah.
You're kind of looking for a reason whether you're aware of it or not. For me, it's actually to some degree, I guess you could say it's a compliment to this podcast, to the Dr. Death, in that I do kind of want to know what happens. Like it's weird how they unfold it because like you know from the beginning that this guy is very bad at doing surgery, but now you're just like, why is he so bad at it? Like how did this happen? But I kind of just want to know. And so, as I said last week, I'm tempted to just Google his name because I'm sure there was a whole Dallas Morning News series on this. And I just didn't know about it because I don't live in Dallas. But then I'm kind of like, then I probably won't listen with such interest.
Yeah.
Like I can't unring that bell once I look at it. But I'm kind of, so maybe I'm just looking for a reason to be annoyed with them so I can justify in my own mind just skipping to the end of the story.
Yeah, because you even mentioned that the other day that you wanted to you're tempted to skip to the quote unquote skip to the end of the story and just do a Google. This sounds good for me. I'm going to try to not know anything about it because it sounds like the perfect podcast for me to listen to when I need podcasts like that to go on walks or when I'm cleaning the bathroom, like something that is going to be kind of serialized like that. You can chug through, like binge through four or five of them at once. That's what really, when I really need my brain to escape somewhere because I'm doing something that I maybe is an onerous task or I just want to take my mind off of things. I love that format. And I will actually, I think I will listen to things that maybe I wouldn't otherwise listen to just because they are in that format, that kind of edge of your seat cliffhanger podcast.
I would say that the mistake I made with this is getting into this at the beginning. Like, if the takeaway for me is, anytime I hear about like a serialized podcast that sounds interesting, note it and then forget it.
Oh yes, and wait till it's over and then binge it.
Come back when they're all out there, because I mean that's what I can't. I have no patience anymore to like wait week after week after week for these things.
And then again, it might just fall off your radar kind of accidentally because, well, I was in this mode of like kind of binging these and going on my walks or doing whatever I was doing. And then if you have to start waiting in between, you don't have that burning, like what happens? Like day one you do, and then it just diminishes over the week, which is why we put out this show every single day so that people don't forget that we're here talking about the issues that matter.
Don't you forget about us. Don't.
All right, I know you know about TBTL, the podcast. You're listening to it right now, but have you tried TBTL, the newsletter? Because you can. Just go over to tbtl.net and click on the button that says sign me up for the TBTL newsletter. I gotta say, it's a lot of fun. Every week, Luke and I record a little video that we include in the newsletter. It's called Hey Dummies. We answer your questions, any questions you want to ask us. Well, there's all kinds of things in the newsletter. Don't take my word for it. Here, this is Mary. She's a big fan of the newsletter.
It has a nice welcome introduction, but then you have these phenomenal GIFs that are so much fun. You talk about amazing, wonderful people, and you introduce us to new things. And then the songs of the week. Oh, my gosh. And it just makes me so happy.
It can make you happy, too. I mean, listen, this is coming from Mary. She doesn't even listen to the podcast. She's here just for the newsletter. No joke. So, again, go to tbtl.net and click on the button that says sign me up for the TBTL newsletter. And we'll try to bring a little extra sunshine to your inbox every Friday afternoon.
Don't you forget about us. All right. That's I paused during that last don't in case you need to put a break in there.
Okay, Andrew, good. And then we can, good. That
can be, I like the idea.
Do you want me to put a break right in between the don'ts?
I kind of thought it'd be funny. It probably, most people probably won't hear anything. I mean, who cares? Why not? We'll explain it. Like, so we don't know what will happen during the breaks on the show. We just have to create a spot where a break can occur. Sometimes we have ads. Sometimes we don't. Sometimes we have little promotional messages. And we have one at the end of the show, which has not typically gotten used, but I think that's going to change. And this just allows the robots to insert whatever important information they need to insert. And so maybe, depending on when someone listens to this show, they may have just heard me go like, don't you forget about, don't. Hey, it's Luke here for Everlane. And then I'll do a whole ad, and then it'll just come back to me going, don't you.
I like that. And, you know, this, since this could be somebody listening to this podcast, like time banditing it, it could be months from now or years from now, and we're actually using that break in the show, that last break, and they might have just heard an ad for Occam's razors. Like, how amazing would that be? If, like, our idea actually comes to fruition, somebody heard this, they start a company,
Andrew,
and then they start advertising,
dude,
with us?
Vertical integration.
Yeah, right?
We need to start making some shit that we can then sell during the breaks. We got this blowtorch called TBTL. Why don't we have a monthly shave club called Occam's Razor that we own, and then we promote it on the show?
I'm going to buy a factory
and all
in
of
Germany.
His vitamins.
I'm going to buy a factory in Germany right now.
I want to see that factory, by the way, Harry. I'm not saying he doesn't own a factory. Who knows? Someday we may be doing ads for Harry's again. I think we did them long ago.
We did.
But we used them, and that actually was quite fine. I like.
Yeah,
them.
I still use their like little, because I clean up my beard. I still use like the shaving cream and the shaving lotion. I love it.
But I want to see that factory in Germany. That's all.
Yeah.
That's all I'm saying. Okay, let us wrap things up here. I was going to say let's go out with a Kurt Vile song, but we already kind of used a Kurt Vile song. Is there anything that you've rocking out to of late?
Would Oh Sherry be a? Would that be off the table?
What? No. Why?
I don't know, because it's a little bit. It's a little bit.
You know, he said another nice thing in that article, because, and I won't delay us for another long period of time with this. But, you know, the story on Journey is that Neil Schon, who's like the guitar player and kind of the main, I think, co-collaborator with Steve Perry, after Steve Perry left the band, and he just left the band because he got burned out, you know, they, I think, cycled through a variety of different singers, and they were trying to find somebody, I don't know, 5-10 years ago, who could sing the songs, and they found this guy named Arnel Pineda, who is was in the Philippines and was doing – they found him on YouTube. He was basically – I don't know if he was doing karaoke or if he was like in a Journey cover band, but let's just say he was pretty much off the radar as far as people being considered to be the lead singer of Journey. They saw him on YouTube and they were like, yeah, this guy's good. They brought him out. They interviewed him. He got the gig. So you might think Steve Perry would have complicated feelings about that, and they asked him about it in this New York Times thing, and he said – yeah, I'm not in the band anymore. And Arnel is. He's like, great. He goes, singers got to stick together.
Oh, nice.
I was like, yeah. That's a really nice approach to that. Because like, it's, even if you quit a band or even if you take time off indefinitely, it's got to hurt a little bit to have somebody come in and sing all of your songs and sing them well.
Well, I think you it would know? Be more hurtful if they became more famous with the other person and that clear. I do think that he is able to kind of take the high road there. I mean, not that he wouldn't publicly anyway, but I think it is easier to be graceful in those situations when obviously your legacy is not really being tarnished. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I guess. But he just comes off as actually an overall pretty, like, I don't know, just like a pretty nice guy. And also he sort of seems like he got out of that. He got out of that that sort of pop music. I don't know what you'd call it. Kind of, he got out of the game right at the right time, and he seems like he's actually pretty centered dude.
I wanted to say something about music.
Please.
I made a mistake on the show the other day.
That's my clean canteen.
Driving me crazy because, okay, this is going to be a little bit of a journey.
Oh, Andrew, hold on. He said it's going to be a little bit of a journey. So you kind of
good call.
You walked right into that one.
I cannot believe he just told that joke.
The other day, I was mentioning the song "Get Back" by Ludacris and the video. You brought up the song. I think we were talking about the video, and that's the iconic video. It's probably my favorite video of all time. It's got Ludacris with these giant, overinflated arms. He gets into a, like, kind of a tussle in the restroom when an annoying guy approaches him and tries to pitch his CD at the urinal, and he's like, "Back off," or "Get back," more accurately. And then he leaves, and then he just meets this biker gang, this female biker gang, and just like rolls the streets with them and does funny things with his giant arms. I love it. I had forgotten that that was a Spike Jonze video. I had mentioned that the guy in the video who's harassing him at the urinal, I said, oh, he's wearing a bunch of Sonics gear. He's a Sonics head. But I think I also said, I think it's somebody famous, and I couldn't remember who it was. Well, today I learned while reading the background of this new video by Kanye West and Lil Pump. A listener sent this to me. It's blowing up the internet. It's called "I Love It." We can't go out with it because every word in it is terrible. But it's another Spike Jonze video. It's like a 2-minute little weird thing where they're wearing these giant blocky outfits. It's actually hilarious. I mean, Kanye, the visuals on this are hilarious. And I was reading the background of it, and again, it's a Spike Jonze thing, and it's kind of similar in this kind of oversized, goofy kind of manner. And I learned that the guy who approaches him at the urinal is Fat Lip from The Far Side. That was a much longer conversation
than
I had.
What up, Fat Lip?
Exactly. And it drives me crazy. I wish I could go back to the episode where we mentioned that, like, 4 weeks ago, and insert me knowing that that was Fat Lip, because I knew that, and then I forgot.
If we had a time machine, is that what you would use it for?
Sadly, I think so.
Well, I mean, there's no wrong answer. Yeah. I'm just curious.
Would you go forward or back?
I'd use it to go back and only buy one additional clean canteen. Because that's just good planning to have two of them, but having four of them, that's excessive.
You know what I would do is I'd use it to go in the future and buy four more time machines.
Oh, man.
You didn't think of that, did you?
I didn't think of that. Mm-hmm. You just blew my mind. All right, so we're going to go out with some Journey.
No.
And we're going to thank everybody.
Solo, Steve Perry.
Oh, this is Steve Perry.
Yeah.
This is post-Journey?
It's Steve Perry, 1984. I don't know if he cut a solo record during the time. All I know is Fat Lip is in the video.
Thanks for listening, everybody. Hey, September 26th, Mariners, TBTL at the Mariners night, mariners.com/TBTL-fatlip. you'll be able to buy your tickets and get your free T-shirt.
I was looking today. It does not look like there are tons of seats left. I don't know if we're the ones who sold out that entire section, but it's looking pretty good. But people, get your tickets in now.
All right. Mariners.com/TBTL for that. Hope to see you there. Be wise, all, and buy your tickets now before they're sold out. Thanks for listening. Go Mariners. Go eat a bagel. And please remember, no mountain too tall.
And good luck to all.
Hold on, hold on. Oh, Sherry, I'm in love. Hold on, hold on. I wanna let go. You'll go on, help me. You'd be better.
Power out.